Welcome to episode 10 of The Short Way Home. I'm your host, Michael Chin. This podcast is released in conjunction with my new book, The Long Way Home, from Cowboy Jamboree Press. Cowboy Jamboree Press, Good Grit Lit, home to books by authors including Sheldon Lee Compton, Adam Van Winkle, Benjamin Drevlow, Darren Dean, Joey Poole, William R. Solden, and Steve Lambert, and more. Visit cowboyjamboreemagazine.com for more information. And this is the final episode of The Short Way Home. I said from the beginning this is a short-run podcast, never meant to kind of just run in perpetuity, but rather just for these first couple months when my new book, The Long Way Home, was out in the world. So I really appreciate everyone who did take the time to listen to some episodes here. Hope you had some fun with it. I know I had some fun recording it. It was unexpected that it would coincide with the coronavirus issues that we've all experienced. I'm recording this a little while in advance, and so I hope that the world is kind of in better shape by the time that this drops. We'll see what happens. I think kind of all bets are off at this point. But moving on with the show, I want to give my thanks to Adam Van Winkle, a founder and general editor over at Cowboy Jamboree, for not only his collaboration on bringing my new book into the world, but for the art for the book cover, as well as this podcast artwork. So for this episode, the focus is on Delete or Decay. It's Matt and Jeff Hardy versus Crazy Steve and Abyss. And I guess you can count Rosemary in there as well. This happened in Impact Wrestling, formerly and perhaps better known as TNA, which stood for Total Nonstop Action. That's the name that company operated under for its early years and arguably its highest profile years. But it was Impact Wrestling by this point. This aired on September 1st, 2016. It's, I think, the only match I'm talking about on this podcast that didn't get broadcast live. I guess Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog would be another exception, since that one was taped in England and then shown in the U.S. Shortly after. And I think it was a live Raw where it was Mr. Perfect versus Ric Flair. But anyway, I'm splitting hairs here a little bit, but this is the lone encounter that did not happen in front of a live audience, that there was no suggestion it was really happening live, which, in a way, I guess, is kind of fitting for our times when we've had a lot of empty arena wrestling, during the coronavirus period. This is actually a match that still could have happened in this setting, for the most part, at least. But when I was thinking about a match to wrap up this podcast on, one of the questions I came back to is one that I've considered a number of times throughout my life, which is, what one match would I show to someone who's not a wrestling fan, to kind of show them why I'm interested in this form, or to kind of lure them in because it's really different from just sort of the, what they might expect from a wrestling match. I think, for example, you could show someone Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant, and if they have no context about who these guys were and the storyline that they had going in, it just sort of could really quickly fall apart, because it's just sort of two guys hugging each other and then smashing each other with their arms, until the closing sequence. I don't think that would work. You could take a really athletic match, like a Ricky Steamboat versus Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage match, which is technically great, and I think it does tell a great story, physically speaking, but I don't know that's really going to jive with someone who's doesn't have some investment in kind of combat sports to begin with. For the story and tied in with kind of some heated actions, like a Steve Austin Bret Hart match from WrestleMania 13, or Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan match from WrestleMania 35, was just a feel good story. And I think even without having a lot of backstory and having watched Kofi Kingston forever, still you can get the vibe of how much that match kind of means for the course of his career. But I decided to take this in a really different direction and think about, well, if someone were interested more in horror movies, for example, or especially B movie kind of productions, I could imagine them being into the Broken Universe stuff that Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy were involved in this era. And I think Delete or Decay is still my pick, and I think it's the first Broken Universe match, so to speak, that I watched in totality. And it was a match that I still hold as kind of the best example of that style. And we'll talk a little more about that as we go in here. But I'm not sure if this should be the first choice or the very last choice that you'd show a non-fan, because I easily see a lot of fans who are, you know, both not into wrestling and not into this style of like B movie horror, sort of being, you know, turned off on multiple levels from what this thing is. I think it's a gamble, but I think showing any match to a non-wrestling fan, expecting them to enjoy it or have it stand as, you know, kind of an example of why you care about something, is a gamble. I had someone who I was dating, you know, years and years back, who I showed Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 24 to back when that was still pretty fresh. That was only, you know, like maybe 3 or 4 years in our rearview mirror when I showed that to her. Thinking, you know, the sheer emotion of this thing and the technical acumen would kind of win over anyone. And after watching, I remember her saying like, okay, so why was that supposed to be good? It's one of those things where, you know, I think to any, you know, wrestling fan who, especially who had any familiarity with Ric Flair or Shawn Michaels, it's like, well, how can you not say that that match is good? But, you know, for a non-fan to watch, you know, a 20-minute plus match, I think it's a big leap of faith. It's hard to kind of convince someone that, you know, wrestling is worthwhile. So Delete or Decay, again, just way outside the box, doing something really different. So to give the context for those who might be, you know, more casual fans who, you know, have no idea what this match is, there was the Broken Universe was this concept that Matt Hardy is pretty much responsible for. I think Jeff Hardy had some creative input on it as well, and the creative people at Impact, I'm sure, had, you know, some say so. But the general consensus is that Matt Hardy, this was mostly his brainchild and kind of his passion project. So just completely reinventing himself. Making himself into this, kind of character who was sort of a spirit who'd occupied his body and spoke in this sort of old style of speech that I don't think he got quite right, but that's part of the humor of it. It was very tongue-in-cheek. You know, it had a lot of horror and kind of gothic kind of elements to it, but it also had a lot of humor embedded in it. Making insider references, famously, you know, poking fun at, you know, Triple H and burying people in one pretty famous segment they did. In the build to Delete or Decay in one of the training montages, making an inside reference to Spot Monkeys and specifically referencing the Young Bucks, who were not a part of Impact Wrestling at that point, and just sort of having some fun with it. To just really a strange kind of out there concept, but involved a lot of elements of sort of magic or magical realism. And in the training vignettes for this specific match, you see Jeff Hardy sparring with a kangaroo, a literal actual kangaroo, who it's suggested has the spirit of Smoking Joe Frazier kind of occupying its body. And we have the Lake of Reincarnation, which is this body of water that they throw people into, and they come out as an older version of themselves. Plays again to those kind of insider references that hardcore wrestling fans will get and can seem pretty random to anyone else. In this match, Abyss goes into the water and comes out as Joseph Parks or as Chris Parks. No, Joseph Parks, I think it is. Yeah, his alter ego is just kind of a big nerdy guy. His brother. So just sort of strange stuff like that. The whole thing is filmed at the Hardy compound, which is what they call Matt Hardy's actual home in Cameron, North Carolina. This thing is all filmed on location, and it's the kind of thing that, again, it probably actually would work in the age of coronavirus, because you really only need the people who appear in the match, such as it is, and the kind of essential crew to film it. That's basically it. No live fans, not a lot of personnel needed. But the match itself, again, I would kind of say it's Matt and Jeff Hardy against Abyss and Crazy Steve. Rosemary was sort of acting as a part of the Decay faction at that point as well. You could more or less call her a part of the match, because she's, you know, basically as involved as Abyss and Crazy Steve for the most part. And for that matter, you could probably also count Matt's wife Reba, and you could probably count her father, who plays the character of Senior Benjamin, who's sort of a all-purpose kind of assistant to Matt Hardy as he's cast here, because they're very much a part of the story being told here as well. You know, and it starts with this series of, you know, the training vignettes and kind of the build to it. And then Rosemary and kind of walking down this street to commandeer a truck from this person, kind of appearing like a zombie, but it's implied that the person who she's trying to grab a ride from or steal the truck of is attracted to her. You know, and so it works on a number of levels in sort of strange ways. But sort of Rosemary and Crazy Steve and ultimately Abyss attack this guy and take his truck and drive to the Hardy compound. They show up, and then the battle is on when they get there. They think they're kind of getting the jump on Hardy. Matt Hardy signals that he knew that they were coming, and then he and Jeff and Reba are all shooting rockets at these guys, just kind of shooting explosives, shooting fireworks, which is the first signal this thing is going to be completely out there. It includes a spot where Jeff Hardy and Crazy Abyss Crazy Steve are taking turns choking each other out underwater, and you know, if by any conventional logic, basically trying to kill each other. You know, and we have scenes like, you know, Senior Benjamin digging the graves of the decay. So, all of this, you know, implying some, you know, incredibly high stakes, but sort of in this, you know, B movie world where nothing really seems, you know, totally permanent. And some of the culminating action here, Abyss has, Janice, which is his barbed wire wrapped, nails driven through it, baseball bat that he's going to hit Matt Hardy with. Jeff pushes him out of the way and takes the blow, implied that Jeff is, you know, very hurt, if not killed by that spot. But you know, Matt's able to carry on. And then there's just this really fun spot at the end, which, absolutely would not work, in front of a live audience in a wrestling ring, which again, I think is part of the brilliance of this thing, is that they sort of ask themselves, what are the things we could do if we were allowed to use special effects and completely suspend audience disbelief and not have to, you know, execute this live in front of people, and just go for those spots. And towards the end, it's that, Rosemary, spits her trademark mist, at Matt Hardy, that, you know, usually is something that blinds people and allows her to defeat them. And he catches it in his mouth and spits it back at her to incapacitate her and basically send the decay packing. Which is just, it's just a fun idea, right? Cause it's just that the mist is such a thing in wrestling. It's traditionally been something that, Japanese wrestlers have used a lot, but not exclusively Japanese wrestlers, but I think the Great Muta kind of was the most famous one to do it. Asuka's been doing it, in WWE more recently. To just sort of, you know, spin that on its head, I think just a really fun concept. And, you know, Impact, did carry on with some stuff like this. Rosemary would be a part of, the Undead Realm stuff they would do with Sue Young, and with Ali. That stuff, I would say was a lot less well received. You know, I haven't followed Impact with any real regularity, you know, much from this era or later, but, you know, I did watch some of it, and I think that stuff is, you know, fun still. I think it's, you know, worth seeing, but at the same time, it's a much bigger reach. It's much more like you have to be sort of into B movie kind of stuff, or really just out there stuff to be on board with this. I think that there's no question the Broken Universe stuff is better executed. It's a sort of a sad story. You know, after all this Broken Universe stuff was so successful, there were some, you know, ownership management changes in Impact Wrestling. And the Hardys kind of wound up on the outs based on this. You know, and I think, it made sense for them that they ended up going to, you know, Ring of Honor and working some independence. But there were all kinds of, you know, ugly legal issues around this in terms of intellectual property, of whether, you know, Hardy owned the Broken kind of gimmick or whether, Impact Wrestling did. Ultimately, within their change in leadership, they just sort of let it go and let Hardy have it. And by that point, he was signed with WWE. He and Jeff returned, you know, pretty famously at WrestleMania 33. And that led to the whole Woken universe, with Woken Matt Hardy, which, what was fun, it sort of felt as though WWE never really got it. In fact, Hardy has spoken about this in some interviews after, that Vince McMahon pretty directly told him, like, if people like this stuff, maybe I'm just out of touch. And I think a lot of people would agree that Vince McMahon is a little bit out of touch with his audience at this point. But The Woken stuff, I think it was fun. I think calling it Woken in and of itself, you know, woke has a very specific connotation in our contemporary culture. And so trying to repurpose it for Matt Hardy's kind of out there character, I don't think really worked. It sort of, you know, just sort of felt like they were forcing that label on something they didn't know what to call. And I think, you know, Hardy got his heyday in his little rivalry with Bray Wyatt and, you know, some you know, little vignettes afterwards. They did a Halloween special at the Hardy compound, but just never really realized its potential on that kind of grand stage. And so at the time of recording this, Matt Hardy just recently signed with AEW, and he has yet to be seen what he exactly is going to do there. But hopefully he may have more of a chance to revive this stuff there. But in any event, for Delete or Decay, you can catch the whole thing. They call it the director's cut. I think it's just splicing together all of the, you know, kind of pre-footage and maybe extending certain pieces of it. But it's on YouTube for free. So if your curiosity has piqued and you haven't seen it, I do encourage you to check it out. I think it's fun. I think it's interesting. If nothing else, it's kind of an innovative take on what wrestling could be. But okay, so with all that said, let's transition to our final reading for this podcast. So I'm going to read a flash piece called Ghost. This appears in the Autopsy and Everything After section of the book, as well as the chapbook by that name that was published by the Florida Review, and originally appeared with Passages North. Okay, Ghost. There was a new wrestler in the territory, went by the name Ghost. Name of the act, name backstage. He didn't say much, and never took off his white mask, even in the shower. He dragged big, heavy chains to the ring with him. The luchadors described him as loco. None of the Americans disagreed. One night, Cowboy Sam snapped. He was trying to talk to Ghost. Wanted him to say just one thing about himself. Where are you from? And how old are you? Then, you got a girl? What's her name? Maybe Cowboy planned it. Or maybe his last thread gave way beneath the weight of the silence, but Cowboy started swinging. Real punches, not the high-arching haymakers we threw for the fans in the cheap seats, but hard, direct ones. He kicked Ghost on the floor, and the destructors and Lady Man's Lance Lennox got in on it. Stiffer than hell, and no sign of any cavalry of good guys coming to his rescue. They left Ghost lying there, but did leave him alive. A relief. I thought they might kill him. That I might be called on to testify and have to choose between perjury or ratting out the boys. There's no right choice in that. But no one checked on him, at least not right away. Then he was gone. Cowboy asked where he'd gotten to. No signs. We thought maybe someone had taken him to the hospital, but everyone was accounted for. The chains were gone too. Those iron chains that echoed every place they went, loud enough that Ghost could have gone without ring music to walk down the aisle. How did the chains disappear? Anytime somebody new came to the territory, we told the story and asked, "Have you seen him?" Asked, "Do you know anybody who worked under a white mask?" They'd ask what his finisher was, but it was a flying clothesline, generic as could be. They'd ask if he had an accent. No one could remember hearing him speak. They asked what he looked like. But aside from the mask, there was nothing remarkable to report on. Muscular, but not jacked. Fit, but not ripped. Somewhere between 5'8 and 6 feet tall was the best we could all agree on. Then All-American Girl said he had a tattoo. We all leaned in close to listen. None of us remembered that, and she said that you'd have to look close to see it. But it was on the back of his neck, usually covered by the mask, but it peeked out sometimes after a match when the mask curled up, when the fabric stuck with sweat. The tattoo said, "Lucinda." No dice. Nobody knew who he was. A specter among damned spirits. A campfire story. A cautionary tale. And Cowboy Sam, his last night in the territory all those years later, crushed his hat between his hands and told those of us who'd been around long enough to remember what he thought all this time. "I wish I'd taken off the son of a bitch's mask. That's all I wanted, just to see." All right, so again, that was Ghost. Again, originally appeared with Passages North. It's also in the chapbook, Autopsy and Everything After, but of course it's also included in my new book, The Long Way Home. So thank you for listening to this episode, and especially if you followed along the whole way. I really appreciate the support and hope you will check out The Long Way Home. And yeah, it's available from Cowboy Jamboree Press, distributed through Amazon. Follow me on Twitter at Mike T. Chin or visit miketchin.com for more details.